bill once over the staggered process Johnson is proposing as he pushes for more debate on certain funding programs.
The Israeli military today is denying claims by Hamas that it has attacked a hospital in Gaza, where Palestinian health officials say thousands of doctors, nurses, patients, and displaced people are trapped. IDF spokeswoman Libby Weiss.
The IDF is not targeting the Shifa hospital. We are responding to fire that is being launched by Hamas adjacent to the hospital, which I think just symbolizes the disregard that Hamas has, certainly for hospitals and other civilian areas.
Health officials said 13 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli strike on a house in Khan Yunis in Gaza today. President Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping are scheduled to meet on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in San Francisco this week. KPIX-TV reporter Da Lin said as residents are preparing for their lives to be disrupted.
The major closures don't happen until Monday.
I'm already having difficulties getting around because of the gates putting up.
Alexandra Alver lives in one of the several senior housing complexes across from Moscone Center.
I don't think I'll be able to go out, really. I've been stocking up on my, household supplies and whatnot.
Like Alexandra, many seniors tell me they've rescheduled doctor's appointments and are preparing the week like a pandemic lockdown.
Hurricanes will soon be out of season, says CBS's Peter King.
There are just under 3 weeks left in the 2023 Atlantic hurricane season. The National Hurricane Center says it's watching a system in the Southwest Caribbean that has about a 20% chance to develop into something stronger, perhaps a tropical system. There have been 20 named storms this year. Only two names remain on the list, Vince and Wilma. The letters Q, U, X, Y, and Z are not used for hurricane names. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Funerals for the 18 victims of the mass shooting in Maine last month are almost complete. Yesterday, there was a service for Jason Walker, a 51-year-old husband and father of two sons. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 53. Southerly winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Lows around 31 tonight. Tomorrow, high of 53. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 42.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Helenbrand. Let me start out by saying I have some of the top caregiver advocates in the state of Wisconsin on our show tonight. You will not want to miss what they have to say about what is happening at a state and federal level to support family caregivers. Joining me tonight will be Janet Zander, Advocacy and Public Policy Coordinator at Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging and Resources, and Beth Fields, Assistant Professor at University of Wisconsin and Civic Media's very own Pizza Box Mics. I can't believe I stumbled on Pizza Box Mics with all of those long titles I'm trying to pronounce. And Pizza Box Mics will be joining me tonight, who has not only worked in the direct care field for many years, but was also a caregiver for his mother. Before I get started, though, I just want to say happy National Caregiver Month to all the dedicated, hardworking caregivers, past or present, for doing what you do to take care of those that you love and support each and every day. Bill Clinton had made a proclamation to caregivers back in the late 1990s during National Family Caregiver Month, and every president, I am happy to report, has done the same. This is a time to not only honor and thank the family caregivers that you know that give so much support to their loved ones, often at the cost of their own physical, financial, and emotional well-being, but it is also time to raise awareness on the fact that there are over 50 million caregivers in America providing over $600 billion a year in unpaid labor. With that being said, let's jump right in. I'm Liza Hellenbrand, and you are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. And my first guest with me tonight is Beth Fields, Assistant Professor at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. So, Beth, thank you for joining me tonight. I gave you a list of questions that I was going to ask you, and my first one isn't even on the list, but don't worry. I'm not throwing you a curveball. I just want to see if we can start out by having you make the connection between the work that you do at UW-Madison and caregiving.
Yeah, thanks, Liza. It's great to be here, and thank you for the opportunity. So I am an occupational therapist and a geriatric health services and caregiving researcher. So my work as an assistant professor is really focused on research-wise, trying to find ways to better systematically include family caregivers in systems of care, primarily in the hospital setting. And I also help educate the next generation of occupational therapy clinicians and make sure that they're practicing at the top of their license and including family caregivers.
Wonderful. Thank you for explaining that. And I can't believe I didn't ask you in DC. So that is wonderful work that you are doing. And you're joining me tonight to speak specifically about the CARE Act, something that I know that is near and dear to your heart. What is the CARE Act and why is it essential for family caregivers?
Yeah, so many state legislators have passed the Caregiver Advise, Record, and Enable Act, which is the CARE Act. And this is a state-level policy that requires hospitals to provide patients the opportunity to identify and record the name of a family caregiver, inform that caregiver when the patient's discharge is going to happen, and then provide that caregiver with any information or education on how to help that patient once they're back home. And a total of 45 states and territories now have CARE Act laws in place, which again is really focused on trying to better support family caregivers when their loved ones go into the hospital and as they transition back home.
And, you know, when I went to Washington, D.C. last month for the first ever Caregiver Summit, I had the pleasure of doing my Capitol Hill visits with you. And during those visits, you told the personal story of why the CARE Act is important to you. Would you mind telling me again about your personal story with the caregiving?
Yeah, of course. So a few years ago now, my older brother was diagnosed with congestive heart failure when he was admitted to a rural hospital here in Wisconsin because of leg edema. And the fluid quickly reached his lungs, interfering with his breathing. And my brother was moved to an intensive care unit and remained there for nearly 3 weeks, which is a long time.
Wow.
And just 5 days later, he was discharged home. So this experience was extremely traumatic for my family. Throughout his stay, my family received little information about his prognosis or what was going to happen. And most alarming to me is that my brother did not receive the necessary care services or referrals to really help him establish a healthier lifestyle once he transitioned back home. And my family received no instruction on how to best support him and or his condition moving forward. And since then, which is most important that I want to get across, is I firmly believe the CARE Act could potentially help with healthcare costs. My brother's been in and out of the hospital since that first day because of medical complications, which have really driven his healthcare costs up and has impacted not only his own health and quality of life, but my family's as well.
So if the CARE Act was in place, how do you think things would have been different for your for you personally?
I personally think my family would have learned. So at the time, I wasn't living in Wisconsin. I was in Pennsylvania, so I wasn't there to really advocate for him. So it was my older parents that were there at the bedside with him, and they weren't provided information on what congestive heart failure is. So I think first and foremost, had they been identified when my brother was admitted to the hospital and documented in his chart, more clinicians would have maybe been able to know that they needed to receive more education before he was discharged home.
Wow. I can't believe that this is still going on and happening and that we don't have something in place. I'm Liza Hallenbrand, and you're listening to The Empowered Caregiver. I'm joined here today with assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Beth Fields, to talk about the CARE Act. And I know, Beth, that you talk all day, every day, in a professional setting. So I'm going to have a little fun with this. I decided to call you Badass Beth for the amazing work that you're doing. And since we've been talking about the CARE Act, which requires hospitals, and let me know if I'm wrong on this, repeating what I've what you've said and what I've heard in the past, this requires hospitals to identify the patient's family caregiver, notify them of the hospital discharge or transfer, and make sure they understand and give them hands-on instruction on how to do at-home care once they get back home. Am I summing it up?
Yeah, that was a great summary, Liza. Identification, notification, and education is what the CARE Act is all about.
I love it. And I love rhymes way better than I love all the acronyms. So thank you for that. So Beth, Wisconsin is unfortunately a little late to the party on this issue. We are one of only like 9 states that doesn't have the CARE Act in place. Is that correct?
I believe today, I've been following AARP, I believe we're up to a total of 45 states and territories, 42 states.
Okay.
And then surrounding territories. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're bottom of the chart there. what have you been able to learn from the states that have their act together, no pun intended, and have already passed the CARE Act?
Yeah, so before moving to Wisconsin, as I mentioned, I lived in Pennsylvania where the CARE Act went into effect in 2017, and I was part of a large team at the University of Pittsburgh and with their health system, UPMC, that looked at compliance and impact of the law, and we found that the health system organization and really the capability of their electronic health record where all the information is documented for a patient was really instrumental in compliance efforts. And we actually published some information on how health systems and what they should be thinking about if they're going to implement the CARE Act. There's also been other evidence, Liza, that's been done outside of my team. So a meta-analysis of 11 randomized controlled trials, and randomized controlled trials are typically what people refer to as the gold standard in research, that found that the integration of family caregivers into the discharge planning process significantly reduced the risk of hospital readmission compared to when caregivers were not included in the care of older adult patients that were discharged home. So that's huge because readmission rates are what drive healthcare costs up, not only for the patients and their families, but the health systems as a whole. Hospitals don't want to get dinged with readmission rates. And then AARP has also really been the champion for this policy, and they completed a national scan of the CARE Act implementation. And they found that during their site visits, that hospital staff consistently reported that family caregivers appeared to be more engaged and confident when taking the patient home because what they thought was the CARE Act.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you know what you're doing, it would obviously help. I can't even imagine. And, you know, I think about someone like myself that gets queasy at the sight of any blood, or I would not be the person for the job. I really wouldn't. And to be given a leaflet or a pamphlet and sent on my merry way or our merry way, I couldn't imagine that that would end well, to be honest. And I know that there's situations like your brother, where it could have ended better. You know, I know that you've probably heard a lot of stories along the way. Is there anything that or any one particular one that comes to mind that you've heard out in your advocacy or in the work that you do that really also just reiterates the need for this?
Oh, Liza, I mean, being a caregiving researcher, I hear stories all the time that really just demonstrate that our family caregivers need help. They're doing more complex medical and nursing tasks than ever before because advances in healthcare and technology, and are aging longer. So I can't just say one story comes to mind. There's a handful of stories. The numbers are really there, and I want our state legislators to know that this is important.
Well, thank you so much, Beth, for the work that you do and for joining me. I know that you're out of state on vacation with some family time, so thank you. Up next, we are going to be joined with Janet Zander, another awesome advocate, and Civic Media's own Pizza Box Mike.
Gillette Intimate gives guys a gentle and easy shave on there, and around there, and even under there. Don't treat your groin like junk. Respect it with Gillette Intimate, the best a man can get. Buy now at a retailer near you.
Temperatures getting low, but demand remains high? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. And Indeed's interview tool lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from their website. Visit Indeed.com/credits.
Let's face it, we're all on the go. Go to work, school, sports, appointments, family gatherings, you name it. Get on the road hassle-free with A Street Auto. With a wide range of inventory, financing options, and excellent customer service, you'll be on the go in no time. Their friendly and knowledgeable staff is ready to help you find a car you deserve, priced to fit your budget. Shop their virtual showroom at 8thStreetAuto.com. Then stop by for a test drive.
Go, go, go to 8th Street Auto.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Joining me next is another badass advocate, Janet Zander, Advocacy and Public Policy Coordinator at Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging and Resources, Inc. There may even be an Inc. on that.
There's an Inc.
Someone in the organization said, no, I think we can add a little more to that. Let's just throw on an ink. Okay. So, Janet, thank you so much for joining me tonight. There is an event happening at the Capitol next week that I believe is being put on by AARP and others. And I would love to give the microphone to you so you can tell us what is going on and what we can do to get involved.
Excellent. Glad to help out. So advocacy organizations like AARP like to have what we call Hill Days. These are days where we take folks up to the state capitol and give them an opportunity to share information and requests directly with their state legislators. So AARP Wisconsin is holding their advocate summit on Monday, November 13th and Tuesday, November 14th. Like most of these events, the first day will be some training and just getting to know one another and getting to know how to be a good advocate. And then on day two, they'll head to the Capitol and they'll be meeting with legislators, dropping off materials. And we decided to use that event to also piggyback and have a CARE Act press conference on Tuesday morning to help us lift that up using utilizing the AARP redshirt volunteers as well.
And the CARE Act, as we mentioned, is something that we're trying to get in place here in Wisconsin that requires hospitals to identify a caregiver and let them know when they're going to be discharged or transferred, and then provide proper education for the caregiver so that they can care for their loved one once they get home. Actually, Janet, there's some positive news on that front, isn't there, about Medicaid and getting some of this help that we need? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah, the timing is really good for this press conference. Recently, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS as most of us refer to them, finalized a rule that would allow practitioners to bill Medicare for training caregivers. So up until now, it's been one of those things that I think many practitioners recognize is important to do, but there wasn't a way to compensate for the time that they're going to spend doing that. As of January 2024, that rule goes into effect and they will actually have a billing code that will not only enable them to be reimbursed, but encourage them to take that extra step and train caregivers.
That is wonderful. You know, I know that there's some pushback on the CARE Act, believe it or not, but that is a wonderful thing to have in place to say, hey, look, money's not the issue. We've got this code. You can bill for it. So that is great news. And I also wanted to share, because I know that you are on the lookout for some caregivers. Have you lined up personal caregivers, or should we put a shout out right now to see if we can drum up some stories?
We're looking for some actual folks who can come to the Capitol on Tuesday morning and be there by 9 o'clock in the morning. So it's not an easy ask. I've got some of my other caregiver advocate peers actively recruiting. Beth is going to be joining us in the morning as well. So we're still looking for caregivers, you know, whether it's somebody caring for a spouse, a parent, an adult with disabilities, a child with special needs. We welcome them all, and we have yet to confirm those other speakers.
So I will put out the request right now that if you believe the CARE Act should be passed, if you have a personal story about how things could have went better, feel free to email me, liza@civicmedia.us, and I can forward you to Janet to make that connection. I cannot emphasize this enough. I am fairly new into the whole world of advocacies, but your stories matter. Your stories are what makes the difference. So we need those storytellers to come up and tell the legislators why this is important. So Janet, I also had the pleasure of spending time with you in Washington, D.C. at the first annual Caregiver Summit. And our time at Capitol Hill was part of the Act on Raise campaign. I know that we could talk about that for hours, but I have to say, first and foremost, you've been such a lifesaver to me because I am new to a lot of this. Your wisdom has been priceless. So thank you for that. But could you just give a quick recap on the Raise Family Caregiver Act and then why we were there to act on it?
Sure. Raise Family Caregiver Act was passed a couple of years ago. The administration has actively been working on laying out a strategy to better support family caregivers across the nation. They have an advisory council that's putting together plans, and they've developed a federal plan and a state plan and local initiatives that we can do that would better support caregivers. The CARE Act is part of one of those state plan initiatives. And we know that right now there are 15 federal agencies busy implementing 350 different actions at the federal level.
Wow. Sounds like they're just like being like a mom up there, right? Just working on 350 different things at once. That is awesome. And so there was also a few state issues, or there was one state issue that I also wanted you to be able to share with people, because I think it was important and I am so grateful you educated me on it. And that is the reimbursement for volunteers.
Yeah, this is a really important federal issue and one that's near and dear to my heart. I've been working in the Aging Network for over 35 years and have personal experience. My father-in-law had end-stage renal disease, and so he was one of many folks who needed transportation for dialysis. And what we discovered is as our volunteer drivers are taxed for any reimbursement they receive for the gas and the maintenance of their cars, et cetera, if they receive over 14 cents a mile. That rate was set by Congress in 1997.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know if you can ride a bike for 14 cents a mile at this point, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, anybody doing business mileage currently is getting 65 and a half cents per mile. The IRS lifts that up annually when they look at what are the inflationary costs, and they make the adjustments. Congress has not looked at that since 1997, and yet volunteer drivers have the same vehicles, the same kind of insurance, and the same wear and tear on their cars, and are volunteering their time. And so as we have difficulty recruiting volunteers because they don't want to have this reimbursement taxed, we want to incentivize those volunteers to come back to us and really continue to offer us that valuable service.
Yeah. Getting taxed on volunteering. What a wonderful concept. Come on, folks. We can do better. You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver. And after this short break, I will be back with Pizza Box Mike.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
It's what we were taught, trained, and told to do.
It could be for anything. Helping a friend move.
Listening to a fellow veteran for hours, at any hour of the day.
Or just simply making time for people. A neighbor, a loved one, or even a stranger.
We're often the first to help others. There's no question about it.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When was the last time you reached out for help?
Perhaps it's time to do for yourself what you would do for others.
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Celebrating 75 years.
We got something going here in Madison.
On the ice.
Shoots and scores again.
Against the boards.
He hangs on. Badgers kill off the major.
Between the pipes.
Redirect another fantastic stop.
This is Badger Hockey.
Shoots one, scores. Wow.
It's everything.
For the win, he shoots and scores.
Badger Hockey lives here.
Keep it going, baby.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Since the moment you were born, I've made 1,000 wishes. Wishes for your future. In a world that's changing fast. For all of the things you may one day do. Do play and laugh. Do win and lose. Do learn from your mistakes. And challenge yourself to grow. Do not be afraid. Or make decisions based in fear. Do it all with confidence and with kindness and strength. Do call your mom and ask her for advice. And always do your best to remember that no matter what you do in this life,
thank you.
What matters to me is that you keep doing. I love you always, Mom. Inspire kids to do at 4-H.org.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 53. Southerly winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Lows around 31 tonight. Tomorrow, high of 53. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 42.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I am joined now by Civic Media's very own Pizza Box Mike from Outside the Pizza Box, who does a show every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. You can listen to it here or stream it anywhere on the Civic Media app. Mike, before we talk caregiving, I'm going to allow you to give a shameless plug. Tell us a little bit more about your show and why the heck it's called Outside the Pizza Box.
Well, it's because I decided early on, I think it was February 15th, that occupying the Capitol to defend democracy and defend those that were less fortunate than me. And Ian's Pizza Boxes came to the Capitol, and I started making signs, and that's how that all came about.
So you were making protest signs with pizza boxes.
Yeah.
And you became known as Pizza Box Mike because you were there every day, a lot?
Yeah, well, I stayed overnight for a couple weeks, whatever it was.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned one of your big causes was the fight for 15, which goes hand in hand. Well, it goes with caregiving, right? I mean, you just told me earlier, a paid direct care worker. The, you know, correct name for it always seems to change, but basically paid caregiver for 30 some years.
Yeah. Started in college. I got tricked. I told you. The guy in my dorm said, "Hey, you want to make some money?" This guy, yeah, it's easy. You know, he's in a wheelchair. You got to help him get dressed and stuff like that. But then he, you know, he goes to class himself and everything. But you got to get up. It's like at 5 a.m. because he has an early class. And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, and I was kind of like a lot of other people that were stupid. I drank back then.
And oh, no.
So that first night I was waking up still from the night before, and it was 5 minutes to 5, and it's snowing.
Oh, no.
And I run across the other side of campus, and I get there, and here's this gentleman who is, 6'7" and weighed 260 pounds. And only after I got there did I find out that I had to, my first day included a what's called a BP program, ball program.
Oh, okay. Good morning.
And I'm like, wow, I'm going to kill that dude. I mean, I can't. There's no way I'm going to leave this guy like this,
okay,
right?
6'7", and I know that you don't have a problem saying this because you're a wrestler, so they always throw, and you're a man, you're not a woman, so we hide all this stuff. But what is your height and weight?
Probably about, I mean, I was 5'5", and maybe 130 pounds.
Oh, my gosh. I was bigger than you. Okay, so 5 in the morning, you're taking a bowel movement training, and 30 years later,
yeah,
there you are.
I mean, well, and that's how the Fight for 15 came about. One thing about doing that after I left college, and I worked for a number of students there, and then when, like, their workers, I was also a resident assistant.
Sure.
And so when everybody went on vacation and there were people in wheelchairs that were there, I'd work for two or three or four different guys.
Oh, wow.
But the thing is, you don't get into it thinking that you're going to be making friends with all these guys.
Right.
And sitting around telling jokes and doing things together. And so it, you know, that's what I mean. It turned into something like, well, yeah, you know, first of all, who enjoys seeing me at 5 in the morning, you know? I might want to stick with that, you know, since somebody appreciates that. And then after I left college, you know, I met somebody that, you know, had just suffered an accident and was one of the fastest recoveries to get out of the hospital with the injury he had and needed help. And then it all started. And the thing about this CARE Act is the entire time that I've worked for people, their family members are powerless.
Right.
And so the empowered caregiver, I'm like, wow, this is perfect. You know how this works out. But yeah, for all those years, they couldn't work and get paid, you know,
right.
and they did a lot of work. So they were there, the volunteer thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can't get paid for it. And then it, over the years it developed that, yeah, you know, part-time they could get paid for doing certain things, but for when they get out of the hospital, when they need IVs or they need something like that, we didn't even do that at the beginning of my career. That was, you know, you had to have nurses come in.
Sure.
But over the years that changed and we received training, and then, you know, like the hospital would keep us informed because I worked for organizations. They were nonprofit, but they were ahead of the game as far as a lot of the other options that you would have for home health care,
mm-hmm.
where they're more, well, let's just say, you know, today when I went through the Capitol and saw all these lobbyists.
Right.
Well,
and you know what? I have to say this because you and I can talk about it. The women that I had on earlier can't.
Mm-hmm.
And why we don't have the CARE Act is hospital lobbyist, the hospital association.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're saying, oh, we do that.
Yeah, well, no, they don't. And I mean, UW nurses don't have a union. Don't get me started.
But right, right.
And that's how I got into the Fight for 15. I was, you know, doing one of my preaching in the rotunda about, you know, how would you like one of your loved ones, you know, having someone come into your home and take care of your loved one for $10 an hour, you know? Do you feel safe with having a person that...
Yeah, how does that saying go? You excluded, right? You excluded, but you get what you pay for, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of bad. But yeah, the fact that the families didn't have any say, you know, in a lot of the things that, you know, that they should be to help a family member. And you talk about the stress and the strain. And
yeah. Well, and you know, Beth made a great point that her parents didn't even really know or understand what their son had.
Right.
You know, and okay, thank God for Google, but that's not always there. That's not always great information. To be honest, if you're talking about medical stuff, don't Google it.
You know, right.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I just, the CARE Act, where was I going with the CARE Act? Other than we need to get it passed, it's going to help save lives. I mean, do you have any personal stories of people that you saw their parents or their loved ones just struggle?
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of, you know, parents watching their one of their children,
right?
You know, survive a serious spinal cord injury, and then, you know, having to be there their whole life, you know, and being the caregiver.
Yeah.
And most of them, like, you know, I would for my mom, or my mom did for me when I got sick.
Well, right.
We didn't mind doing that. But if there isn't a support network there, or for, in my experience, is there's not enough people in the labor force because there's not enough pay. I mean, I had 30 some years experience, and I think my highest pay was $11.60 or something like that. And I was working 60 or 70 hours, but I couldn't, I had to work different programs. Yes. And you always had to have another job because you weren't making enough money.
And
or you had
no,
two or three clients.
No benefits?
No. I mean, well, expensive benefits, you know, to pay for health insurance was really high.
I can imagine. And, you know, let me ask you about this. I read that when it comes to the great exodus of paid caregivers, it's not only the common sense, the crappy pay and hard emotional, physical work conditions. It's also the management and the bureaucracy itself is a large part of why a lot of people leave. And I don't want you to name names of care agencies, but what is your experience with the agency themselves? Did you feel supported, trained, you know, heard?
Yeah, I was kind of lucky, but I spent a number of years in two different well-known nonprofit in Madison, in Dane County. And I never had bad experiences with the people, the organization, any of the management. I did with how powerless we were as workers, as well as family members. I can't give you all the details of what I mean by that.
Sure.
But yeah, well, for example, working too many hours, and there, you know, there's supposed to be laws to protect you from as a worker to not work too many hours straight.
Right.
But when it involves the health care of the person that you're taking care of, I mean, you find a way to work around that. And then you have two different, you have to bill to a different agency so you're not over hours on another, you know, that's only funded for this much. And it's really kind of a, I mean, it's demeaning as hell is what it is.
And I've got to only imagine that there's little support for you as the paid caregiver. I mean, by the agency. Where I'm going with this is caregiver burnout is almost a given for people that stick with this. I can't imagine that they have a support group, a support, you know, resources for you guys for your own well-being.
That is, in fact, what happened to me the last few years of my being in that industry was fewer workers, more clients, you know, bills going up. I mean, you got to keep working. And yeah, I what I feared happened. I thought, you know, I'm doing this working with people with physical limitations, and eventually I'm going to need help because something's going to happen to me. And lo and behold, it did. I mean, I'd have to say that the heavy stress load I took for the last 4 or 5 years might have contributed to my illnesses.
I would imagine, and I want to talk to you a little bit more about that if we shift gears. You also were the primary caregiver of your mother? Is that what you're talking about? Or your own personal?
Well,
I know you've had your own health challenges.
I shared the house with my mom, and I would have to say that she was more of a caregiver than I was. You know, going through cancer treatment, and, you know, she took me to the hospital a few times, emergency room. Without that, I probably wouldn't have made it. And, you know, it went both ways. But when my mom unfortunately collapsed this last year, or this year, the first thing I thought was, you know, And I always told my mom, however long you want to stay here, Mom, I will always be here. You know what I mean? And that way I knew she knew if something happened or she needed me to be there, I was going to be there.
And can I ask, how old was your mom, approximately, if you can't remember, when you had your cancer?
Was like 77 or 78.
So 79,
yeah.
Yeah. That's just...
And she was still my mom and my best friend, and she took care of me, and yeah, I was very lucky.
That is wonderful that she was there for you and that you were there for her. And
I shoveled the driveway so she could go to church.
You know what? Okay, that makes...
Hey, man, early in the morning, you know, do you really need to go to church, Mom? You know, if she wanted to go, I made sure that I got the driveway done. But for the first couple of years I was there, I was limited physically to what I could do. I couldn't mow the yard.
Yeah.
I couldn't shovel. But now I'm back to He-Man strength again. I'm like, 125 pounds again.
Wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Pizza Box Mike, I'm going to pick up this conversation about Pizza Box Mike's own personal caregiving story once we return.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Can I touch this? Where does sand come from? Is this tree good for climbing? What happens if I mix these two things together? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Storing your guns securely is the best way to prevent family fire, including unintentional shootings. For more information on safe gun storage and ways to keep your family safe, visit endfamilyfire.org. That's endfamilyfire.org.
What do we keep in the attic? What's this thing called? Can I ride my bike backwards?
Like I said, kids are curious. It's up to us to keep them safe. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and